This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV program on Free Speech TV and on our website. Two judges have now struck down Donald Trump's second attempt at banning Muslims from a handful of countries to enter the United States. A federal judge in Hawaii issued a temporary restraining order against the ban, which would have gone into effect on Thursday. The ruling by Judge Derek Watson was made on a case brought by the state of Hawaii against the federal government. A second judge in Maryland then blocked the core part of the ban from going into effect as well. Speaking to a crowd of supporters on Wednesday night in Nashville, Tennessee, Trump lambasted the rulings, saying they, quote, make us look weak. My guest is Bahir Azmi. He is the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Welcome to the program, Bahir.
Oh, thank you, Sonali.
So Trump said in his speech that this was a watered-down version of the first attempt at a Muslim ban. He doesn't like to call it a Muslim ban, but that's what he called it during his campaign. In what way was this watered down, and why is it that these judges didn't buy it?
Well, this one is slightly less broad, slightly less blunderbuss, slightly less facially insane. The first version simply blocked anyone, including individuals who had a legal entitlement, a visa or a green card, from entering the United States if they were from one of six countries. This one is somewhat more tailored insofar as it only prohibits the issuance of new visas from individuals from the same countries, except Iraq was taken off, and it attempts to include what is ultimately an incredibly thin national security justification. But ultimately, what the courts recognized is this is still motivated by a discriminatory intent. It's a Muslim ban targeting Muslims alone on the basis of their religion, and you can't cover up the discriminatory stench with, you know, the Trump version of cheap cologne.
And in fact, the statements that Trump made over the past year were cited by the judge. Similar sentiments were expressed by Trump at the rally or campaign event that he had in Nashville, Tennessee. He's already campaigning for a second term on Wednesday night. Let's actually watch some of the excerpts from the speech. And I really want to warn our audience, if you have sort of avoided Trump's speeches, be ready. I mean, there is a very real sense of anger and belligerence and whipping up the crowd into a frenzy here. Here is Trump on Wednesday night responding to the federal judge's ruling in Hawaii.
The judge has just blocked our executive order on travel and refugees coming into our country from certain countries. The order he blocked was a watered-down version of the first order that was also blocked by another judge and should have never been blocked to start with. This new order was tailored to the dictates of the Ninth Circuit's, in my opinion, flawed ruling. This is, in the opinion of many, an unprecedented judicial overreach. The law and the Constitution give the president the power to suspend immigration when he deems, or she, fortunately it will not be Hillary she, when he or she deems it to be in the national interests of our country. This ruling makes us look weak. We're going to fight this terrible ruling. We're going to take our case as far as it needs to go, including all the way up to the Supreme Court. We're going to win. We're going to keep our citizens safe. Liberal Democratic lawyer Alan Dershowitz, good lawyer, just said that we would win this case before the Supreme Court of the United States. Remember this, I wasn't thrilled. But the lawyers all said, oh, let's tailor it. This is a watered-down version of the first one. This is a watered-down version. And let me tell you something. I think we ought to go back to the first one and go all the way, which is what I wanted to do in the first place. The danger is clear. The law is clear. The need for my executive order is clear. I was elected to change our broken and dangerous system and thinking in government that has weakened and endangered our country and left our people defenseless. And I will not stop fighting for the safety of you and your families, believe me. Not today, not ever. We're going to win it. We're going to win it. The best way to keep foreign terrorists, or as some people would say in certain instances, radical Islamic terrorists from attacking our country is to stop them from entering our country in the first place.
And that is a very angry and belligerent Donald Trump speaking to an audience of supporters on Wednesday night in Nashville, Tennessee. My guest, Bahar Azmi, is the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. One of the things that he said many things. One of the things he said was that these rulings by these judges, at that point, I believe it was just the Hawaii judge that had made his ruling, was, quote, unprecedented judicial overreach. Was it indeed unprecedented, Bahar?
Nonsense. I mean, here he is in the one of the cradles of the Confederacy, using all of the kind of historical tactics of the segregationist defenders, the sort of feeding into white racial resentment, attacking the courts as elitist, and appealing to the deepest white nationalist sentiments and resentments of the crowd against the other, in this case, not African Americans, but Muslims. The legal ruling was so grounded in the most elementary principles in the First Amendment of our Constitution, which is that the government cannot single out a religion for disfavored treatment. There sort of couldn't be anything more basic. And I think what was unprecedented is how ignorant he is and how much he is his worst enemy as a client. Because in order to identify that this was clearly a Muslim ban, the court relied on dozens of statements by him and his white nationalist support staff to demonstrate that this was meant to target Muslims on the basis of their religion and send a message that the Muslim faith is disfavored and not worth integrating into American society.
And so his own rhetoric, in a way, doomed him, right? I mean, yet he continued to use this rhetoric. Think Progress had an interesting article about this called The Unfixable Problem with Trump's Muslim Ban. And in it, the author says, if you plan to unconstitutionally target a group of people because of their faith, it's a good idea not to run around the country announcing this fact. Of course, I mean, he, in a way, has done us a favor by being upfront about it, because other president with more finesse might have possibly been able to get away with this.
Yeah, clearly his statements doomed him and made this an easy case. I mean, I think what also obviously doomed him, as with the other ban and so much of what animates his policy, is the sort of the absence of any legitimate evidence supporting the Muslim ban and supporting exclusion of people from these countries. It just doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It's just hot rhetoric, like the idea that the inner cities are rife with black on black violence, the sort of tactics of an authoritarian, which is, you know, create an atmosphere of chaos, generate it, and then demand a strongman response to it, and then whack any democratic entities or institutions who want to stand in your way, and then foment populist resentment against those institutions who he says are standing in the way of strength.
Right. He promised that he would never let down his people, that he was the one who was going to protect them. And of course, he invoked that favorite phrase radical Islamic terrorists. And that was the moment where you saw the crowd sort of almost froth at the mouth and scream in a frenzy. However, you're right. What is the evidence that there are radical Islamic terrorists entering the country to attack Americans? I mean, that you can argue that happened on September 11th, 2001. Most of those men were Saudis.
From none of these countries.
Exactly.
Yes.
So from those countries, is there any evidence? I know that Kellyanne Conway referred to the two Iraqi men. She thought they actually did in Bowling Green, that she thought they actually did commit some sort of crime, but apparently they were planning it. And now Iraq is off the list.
Yeah, no, there's no evidence. They cite another piece of quote evidence from Attorney General Sessions that there are 300 refugees who are under FBI investigation. That evidence has not been substantiated, is ultimately just cotton candy. There's nothing there. This is designed to send a social message to his base that he's going to act against the other, and he's going to put the other in their place. And that doesn't need to be tethered to evidence. That only needs to be satisfying to the resentments that people are feeling, and that he himself is fomenting. So the classic authoritarian tactic: manufacture a threat, attempt to respond boldly, and blame democratic institutions that try and mediate and stand up for constitutional values.
And that is also in line with his statement that these rulings make us look weak. A lot of the appeal that he holds among a certain sort of faction within our country is this strict father approach of conservative politics, right? And you can't let anybody make you look weak. However, you know, by the same token, if you look back through history, maybe giving women the right to vote made the country look weak, or maybe abolishing slavery made the country look weak in the eyes of somebody like Trump.
Yeah, I mean, it's again a value that turns only on sort of authoritarian strength.
Yeah.
And it may make him look weak and ignorant and ill-considered, but it doesn't make the country look weak. It makes the country look strong, naturally, because we're not exceeding our basic constitutional values to a strong man with these, you know, retrograde, authoritarian, racist, white nationalist instincts. This strengthens our institutions. And if he wants to tell the United States Supreme Court that judicial review of hasty, discriminatory executive action makes this country look weak, he's got another thing coming from John Roberts and Anthony Kennedy, not to mention the more liberal wing of the party, of the court.
Let's talk about where it stands now. I understand the restraining order that was filed by the judge in Hawaii, Derek Watson, is temporary. The Maryland ruling was directed at the heart of the ban itself.
Yeah.
Where does it land legally right now?
So what the courts did here is issue what's called a temporary restraining order with the emphasis on temporary. And it's a procedure that's well established in the law to basically hold things in place until the court has time to consider the issues more fully. So the litigants, the plaintiffs, went into court this week saying the ban's going into effect on the 16th. That will harm a lot of people and cause them irreparable injury. So before you injure them in this way, enjoin, stop, delay the implementation of this ban so we can educate you the court more fully on the constitutional problems. Now, but still the court will only issue a stay or hold up the executive order if the court believes that the plaintiffs have a likelihood of success that ultimately will win. You can't just go in on a wing and a prayer and hope to stop an executive order. And what the court surfaced is the obvious discriminatory feature of this program, the absence of evidence and the real harm to people. And I don't see, after a fuller record being developed, that that decision would change by this court or the Maryland court or other courts that are going to consider similar challenges.
So what about Trump's threat to take it all the way to the Supreme Court? And he even sort of said this flippantly that maybe we should go back to the first version and take that all the way to the Supreme Court. He then cited Alan Dershowitz saying that apparently Alan Dershowitz told him it would actually win if it went to the Supreme Court.
It won't. I mean, that's the sort of ultimate takeaway. But obviously, as a legal matter, it won't win. But as a political matter, this is just rhetoric. And when he loses in the Supreme Court, he will bash the Supreme Court and threaten to dismantle it. This is out of the sort of authoritarian segregationist populist playbook. Ultimately, it will not win in the Supreme Court because I can say with some confidence, Justice Kennedy does not like overt racism. And Justice Kennedy, and he's the swing voter, as everyone knows, cares about preserving democratic institutions. And this man doesn't. Justice Kennedy sees his role and the court's role as a check against excessive executive power. You can bring it to the Supreme Court. I certainly don't like his chances, no matter what Alan Dershowitz says. And he's not a particularly reliable prognosticator of what the law is or should be.
He has actually gone on record saying that he does not support the travel ban, the Muslim ban, but he thinks that it could win at the Supreme Court if it does go all the way there. Now, of course, a big issue is whether Neil Gorsuch will be the ninth justice. This is Trump's nominee to replace the seat vacated by Antonin Scalia when he died. Right now, there's only eight justices, and it has sort of made Supreme Court rulings much more different than they normally would be. If Neil Gorsuch is confirmed to the Supreme Court before the Trump administration takes this to that court, what do you think might happen?
Well, I don't know how he'll vote. I'm sure Trump, puerile and ignorant as he is, would expect that Gorsuch automatically would vote for him as a kind of form of tribal loyalty or quid pro quo. I don't think that's the kind of justice Gorsuch would be. That is, simply vote for the person who appointed him. And I would like to think that as someone with a judicial temperament, one that I deeply disagree with, but nevertheless, he would not appreciate that expectation of Trump's rhetoric. So it's not clear how Gorsuch would vote. As I sort of mentioned before, I'm focusing on Justice Kennedy. He tends to be the swing vote. And I feel fairly confident that he would vote with the four liberal members of the court and strike this down. I think Justice Roberts also would have a serious problem with something so blatant. I think Justice Roberts all too much turns a bly eye into sort of racist practices, racial discrimination, as way too willing to tolerate government justifications for practices that harm minorities. But this, again, is so overt. It really is, fits into the unfortunate caricature that Justice Roberts demands before he takes action on racial discrimination. It fits into the caricature of a George Wallace or a Bull Connor.
Right. Often the judges like him want to see very clear evidence of overt racism, and Trump happens to be the one handing it to them in that case. Well, Bahar, what's a good website for people to find out more about the work that you do?
Yes, please visit us at ccrjustice.org.
That's ccrjustice.org. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sonali.
Bahar Azmi is the legal director at the Center for Constitutional Rights. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all the websites that we mention on the air, and you can also sign up for our daily newsletter. Do find us as well on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.